Hello, and welcome to episode 42 of Public Interest Podcast with your host, Jordan Cooper, where we interview politicians, activists, advocates, and others who seek to improve the state of the world. We're here today with Matt Losak, who's the Executive Director of Renters Alliance in Montgomery County, Maryland. How are you doing today, Matt?
So far, so good, although I think everybody's still somewhat in shock over the last week.
So to our listeners who may be listening at any point in the future, the last week was the presidential election in the United States. So the first question I'd like to ask you, Matt, is what are you currently doing or what have you ever done to advance the public interest and why?
Well, I think housing is a very, very important thing. And I've been a Peace Corps volunteer. I've worked in political campaigns. I work for the federal government. I've worked for municipal government. I work for nonprofits. And I founded two nonprofits, including the Montgomery County Renters Alliance. And I can tell you there's a whole lot of things that I've done that were a whole lot sexier than working in the rental housing justice profession. But I can't think of anything that has been as meaningful as working for renters' rights. And it's a slow discovery. People have thought about rental housing, you know, as a common status for people. That it's usually a temporary status for people on their way to owning a house. And yet the demographic trends in the United States are that more and more people are living in rental housing. The national statistic now is over 36%. That's based on 2013 census data. And in places like downtown Silver Spring, Bethesda, and Rockville, we're talking about 50, 60, 70, or even higher percentages of people living in rental housing and expecting to live in rental housing for the rest of their lives.
And why is that? Why would they not expect to own?
Well, first of all, it's not 1955 anymore. In 1955, if you were a postman and you were lucky enough to have a job with the post office, you could buy a house, you could have a couple of cars, you could have a couple of kids, a wife or a husband, and a cat and a dog.
Could you send the kids to college?
And you might even be able to send them to college if you scrimped and saved or whatever, especially if it were a state college. When I went to college, it was only $1,300 a semester.
And when I went to college, it was $37,000 a year. And then now my same school, 10 years after I graduated, is above $50,000 a year.
That's right. So even state colleges are very expensive. And private colleges are usually well beyond the reach of the average people. So there's a economic shift that's taken place in our country where certain basics like housing have moved out of reach in key job areas from average working people and certainly the working poor. So a house used to be something that everybody could afford. It's not something that everybody can afford now. That's one issue. That's an obvious issue. But there's another issue people haven't really considered, and that is our urban areas have been building out for quite some time. And if you want to live in one of those urban areas where there are decent paying jobs, like around Washington, D.C., or New York City, or San Francisco, or Chicago, you're going to live in a very expensive housing market. So the value of living in this area is it's desirable because you want a good job, but likewise, the competition and the demand for housing is very high. In Montgomery County, we have a 2.5% vacancy rate. That is extremely low. Average is around 5%.
So who is that good for and who is that bad for?
Well, it's great for the landlords. That means competition for an apartment is very high and you can charge very high rents because you know somebody's going to pay it. It's very bad for the people who are currently living in those apartments long term. People who moved in when they were 50 and are now 80 are suddenly seeing their housing very unstable, that they can be priced out and could lose their homes. And where are they going to go? Their doctors, their communities, their churches, their synagogues, everything is within their community, and that's how they live, and that's what they're integrated into, but they can't be sure that they can afford it. So in a way, what we see with renters is that when we watched the foreclosure crisis of some years ago, which was a disaster for the country, renters see that each year because they're never sure if they're going to lose their home.
For our listeners, Matt was just referring to the 2007-2008 subprime mortgage crisis that led to a number of foreclosures across the nation and a nationwide, actually global recession.
And for the people living in those houses, it meant losing their homes. renters in Montgomery County are basically living on a variable mortgage rate.
Mm-hmm.
And so because you can't predict what your rent is going to be next year.
Which is what led to the whole crisis to begin with.
That's right. So we're seeing upwards of 40% of this region unstable.
Mm-hmm.
And what does instability mean? Mm-hmm. You know, when, if your children are in school, it could mean breaking the relationship they have with their teachers and having to move them, which affects academic performance.
Mm-hmm.
It could mean stress and health problems for seniors,
mm-hmm.
the disabled, the mentally ill, people who are vulnerable in their home situation, and just increased stress for everybody else who chooses to live in rental housing for the reasons I was going to get to, besides the economic requirement now, but also because they want to be near transportation,
right.
They want to be near services, they don't need a 5-bedroom apartment or home anymore, and they want to move into something more manageable.
Mm-hmm.
Any combination of renter living,
mm-hmm.
which is a new culture, a permanent culture now,
mm-hmm.
than having to own or renting until you own. That
so
has changed.
You're talking a little bit about both cultural and demographic and economic shifts, frankly, across the nation. And there's another shift that I was wondering if it plays into this at all, which is the increased mobility of the workforce, especially the millennial workforce, where you may have a job for 2 years in New York City, then you end up moving to Denver, you spend some time in Washington, D.C. with an administration, a congressman, mm-hmm. whatever, you move to San Francisco, maybe it's in London. So this kind of perennially mobile workforce essentially almost incentivizes renting because of short-term living as part of a... How does that phenomenon that we've been seeing affect the rental market and the housing market in general in Montgomery County?
I'm not sure. I do know when I was growing up, you know, in the 60s and 70s in mm-hmm. Connecticut, there were people who were transferred all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And they were transferred and they bought a house
right
where they were transferred to.
Huh.
So I think that the transferring situation, the mobility situation in the job market may be something that's consistent regardless of the homes you choose. What has changed in the job market is that where once, back in the good old 50s again, if that was necessarily a good time, but you know, we went to work at 8 o'clock in the morning and you got back at 5 and you had read the newspaper, had your cocktail, and had dinner with the family.
Mm-hmm.
Now people work, you know, 9, 10, 11 hours a day.
Mm-hmm.
They have their cell phones with them at all time.
Mm-hmm.
And so being close to work is a whole lot more important than it used to be.
Hmm.
Because you don't have that much free time anymore.
Traffic congestion
is tremendously worse. And so back to the transportation,
mm-hmm.
and back to the job hubs, wanting to live relatively close to where you work, wanting to get things quickly. I don't want to drive 25 minutes to the grocery store. I want to walk down to the corner to grab the bottle of milk that I need. And so there's a lot of shifts in our culture that lead to a higher demand for rental housing in urban areas.
Now, I'm going to throw something out there, and this may not be something that you really can speak to, but it's basically in terms of racial components of housing. You saw in the early 20th century that the poorest would be concentrated in urban areas, and that those who are wealthy, especially after World War II, would try to leave the urban areas. And then you had suburban sprawl after World War II, where you had a whole rising middle class. And you had, I think, a big thing in the 1950s and 60s was urban decay. And you had riots, and then you had the wealth going out to the counties. And now there's almost a reverse trend across the nation and maybe the developed world, where you have, maybe across the whole world, where you have the wealthy populations repatriating to urban areas. So you have a empty nesters, right? So a heterosexual couple in their mid-60s who've pulled in well into the six figures for much of their career. They have two kids, often college, adult kids. They have a 6-bedroom home in Potomac they sell, and they go into Georgetown for a smaller townhouse or a 2 or 3 bedroom condo in the city. What's happening there? What is this? How does this affect job markets? What's going on?
Well, I know this from my observation. I'm not a sociologist, but first of all, the wealthy,
mm-hmm.
the really wealthy,
mm-hmm.
Have an apartment in New York and a house in Connecticut.
Okay.
So and someplace else in the South and someplace in Europe.
Mm-hmm.
So in terms of white flight or wealthy flight from urban areas. Mm-hmm. I think that was a different phenomenon because that was back when you could buy a house mm-hmm. on Long Island or in Connecticut or in Montgomery County. Mm-hmm. And you could leave downtown D.C. because living in, with a yard and near suburban schools was better for raising children. Mm-hmm. Yes, there was some concern of crime in the cities. Mm-hmm. And I think some of that drove people out. But I think a lot of them were people who grew up in cities and thought of suburbs as the Shangri-La places for better lives. Mm-hmm. And I think many people would, you know, if I were wealthy, I'd be happy to have a house and a big garden if I weren't too far from my job or I didn't have to go to my job. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a nice life. People can't afford that life now.
So it sounds like growing socioeconomic disparities across the nation are heavily influencing this rise in the renter population that you seek to represent.
I think so. It's a combination. As I say, culture, you know, experience begets culture and culture begets experience. Uh-huh. So, you know, people may have been forced to live in rental housing and then they make rental communities into more interesting communities. Mm-hmm. And then people want to be part of those communities and so on. So there's a lots of reasons for why people are motivated to move in the directions that they do. The obvious ones can't be ignored. People just can't go and buy a house in Silver Spring mm-hmm. without laying out $400,000 to $500,000.
So speaking of motivations, I'd like to turn the conversation back to yours. Mm-hmm. You mentioned doing Peace Corps, working in a lot of public sector jobs, starting two nonprofits. You know, I guess the first thing I'd like to ask is what makes you so passionate about housing issues that you started this new nonprofit to work to address these issues? Is it social justice? What is it? And then after that, I want to go to the earlier parts of your career and see how that led to where you are today.
I love talking about myself. Let's see.
So why are you passionate about housing issues?
Well, you know, as with most people who work in do-gooder industries, mm-hmm. they're usually self-motivated for some reasons, self-interested. Mm-hmm. For me, I was working for the labor unions. I had gotten a great job working for the National Labor College. Mm-hmm. I was traveling quite a bit, recruiting students for the National Labor College and marketing the National Labor College nationally. And I found myself in Chicago one day and had realized that I put my rent check on the refrigerator and forgot to turn it in. Huh. So I called the property manager and I said, hey, the check's on the refrigerator. Can I hand it in late? She said, sure, but you have to pay a $25 late fee. So I said, all right, so I could do that. Got home, brought her down the rent check, handed her the $25 late fee, and paid the next month's rent because I knew I'd be traveling. 6 weeks later, I got an eviction notice. I said, it went down, and I said, what was this all about? They said, well, you were late. I said, well, what did I pay the $25 late fee for?
Yeah.
And why would you want to try to evict me in the first place?
Yeah.
And they were very rude with me.
Huh.
And I had never experienced that. I came from New York, as would be an indicator of why some of this organized voice in Montgomery County is cropping up, because many tenants have come from other places where there were renter protections and are utterly shocked, as I was, to find out that there weren't any. And so they were difficult with me and said I was going to have to go to court. But then I noticed, and this was a summons. Mm-hmm. Then I noticed
a
court summons.
Oh, a summons. Okay, yeah.
And I noticed on the bottom of it that it was sworn out by the landlord's attorney. And on the date that it was sworn out, claiming that I had not paid that month's rent nor the next month's rent, mm-hmm. that it was sworn out 4 days after both checks had already cleared my bank account.
So you just brought in the bank statement and a judge throughout the case?
No, I called the clerk of the court and uh-huh. asked what to do. And they said, well, if you can prove that, call the attorney and tell him that he's made a mistake and that if he doesn't correct it, you're going to sue him. And ask for a letter of apology, which I did, and got all of that, which are enshrined in my home. But during all of this period, I went to what I
Can
thought...
Can you high-five me for that?
Right. There you go. So then I went around my building, and I said, is there a tenants association? And somebody says, yes, there are, but it's run by many seniors who've been doing this for years, mm-hmm. and they've got a big lawsuit against the...
And for our listeners who can't tell how old you are, and what decade of life approximately were you in when this occurred?
This was only about 10 years ago.
Which would make you in what decade of life?
I'm in my fifth decade of life.
So in your 40s.
Yeah. No, okay. In my 50s.
But this happened in your 40s, you're saying?
No, yes, it did. That's right. In my late 40s. I can't believe that it's that old. So I went around looking and found some people who were active in the building.
Yeah.
They had a lawsuit against the same property manager for nonsense.
Yes.
Which they eventually won.
Yes.
And I got involved in the Tenants Association and then started learning about the laws or the lack thereof in Montgomery County. I and council member Mark Elrich and two or three other renters organized a petition with over 1,000 signatures to give to County Executive Leggett, urging him to establish some form of rent stabilization, to end or to implement some kind of just cause eviction law, that is, requiring a landlord to have a good reason not to renew your lease at the end of a lease term. So they can't just say, as they do now, we say nothing at all, you have to leave.
But, and the reason why they would do that is because they would like to increase the rents and get somebody who would pay even more money potentially after they remodel the place. Is that generally the reason why they would pick you out?
No, the reason why they generally would do it is because you've demanded promised or required services or are organizing other tenants.
Really?
It's usually a retaliatory reason. Why else would you get rid of?
A reliable renter.
They can evict. Any renter can be evicted if you don't pay your rent or you're breaking the law in some substantial way or breaking the lease in some substantial way. Mm-hmm. Landlord can always evict you under those terms. Mm-hmm. And just cause eviction law gives them all of those terms and other good business reasons, like say you've got a small apartment building and that your family owns and there's only four apartments and you've decided that the one that this person is living in is now going to be the home of your mother-in-law, so you're going to take it off the market. That's a just cause reason. But absent that, the law states now the landlord doesn't have to provide any reason at all, which leaves the renter wide open to retaliatory actions by the landlord.
But isn't the landlord in that circumstance breaking the contract, and therefore couldn't the tenant sue the landlord just as the landlord would sue the tenant to evict him for non-payment?
The contract, say, goes until December 31st. The county law says you have to give 60 days notice. So 2 months before December 31st, before your lease comes due.
Yeah.
The landlord can say, not only can they say, we're not going to renew, they can also completely renegotiate the lease. So they could say, you know what, you can't stay in that apartment anymore, or we're closing the pool, or we're only going to have one elevator instead of two, or we're going to do any number of other things, and if you want it, sign the lease. If you don't, move out. So in just cause eviction, generally the terms of the lease remain the same. The only thing that changes is whatever is considered a reasonable rent increase.
So, like, let's say my lease expires in December, and before December, let's say in August, my washing machine breaks. I'm renting, and I want my landlord to replace the washing machine. He refuses to do so, and then because I was difficult, he could evict me, and he could basically change the terms of the lease in December and kick me out.
Well, he wouldn't change the terms of the lease. What he'd simply say is, we're not going to renew.
Yeah, and he wouldn't need to give a reason with the current law.
He wouldn't give any current reason at all. He would simply say, we've decided to exercise our right not to renew.
And in that case, could the tenant have taken action against the landlord to get the washing machine replaced?
During the time of the lease, yes. And you could probably pursue some type of compensation, though it is not easy. I mean, this is a civil lawsuit.
And it would be like a small amount of compensation. But in order to get that, you'd have to spend more money on a lawyer, probably.
Probably.
So it wouldn't even be worth it.
Maybe, maybe not. Depends. Maybe it'd be a point of pride or, in principle.
Right.
But very difficult.
Yeah.
So, was there a laundromat across the street? So I went across the street. How many times did you go across the street? 6 times in the last 3 months.
Yeah.
The judge, how much was that worth to you? The $75 court filing fee. What are we talking about?
Yeah.
and I'm sorry that your landlord was rude to you and negligent. And thanks, have a nice day. So certain types of disputes, if the landlord sees you as problematic, they can simply not renew, even if what you're pursuing is something that you've been paying for mm-hmm. or that the law entitles you to.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you could prove that you were being retaliated against, like a landlord, and by the way, the landlords in this area have been advised by the Landlords Association and their own attorneys not to say anything at all. Mm-hmm. But if they were foolish enough to say the reason why we're evicting you is because you tried to organize a tenants association and you happen to have a communication from the landlord saying such a thing, mm-hmm. well, you'll have a case.
Mm-hmm.
And then you'll probably...
But if they ignore you, you have no case.
If they say nothing at all, it's very difficult to establish a case. Not impossible, but difficult. Lawyers and the rest of it. So, rent stabilization, just cause eviction, an end to month-to-month lease fees, and the establishment of a working group to look into renter issues. Those were the four issues on the petition we submitted to Ike Leggett in 2007.
And for our listeners, Ike Leggett is a Montgomery County executive, so it's local government.
Right. He's like the mayor of Montgomery County, except he's county executive. He agreed to the, as any good politician would, rather than anything specific, he agreed to the measure to study these issues. And so he appointed me chair of this working group. We had about 15 members, which included a number of activist organizations,
mm-hmm.
Senator Jamie Raskin's office, Mark Elrich's office, the councilman, Casa de Maryland, and others, as well as the Landlords Association.
Interesting. So I want to bring it back, though, to the story of Matt Losak. So I understand now that you are clearly passionate about renters' issues, both from personal experience and as a matter of justice in your eyes. Talk to me a little bit about what's the organization that you started before Renters Alliance?
The Peace Corps Fund. I was a Peace Corps volunteer in Southern Africa.
Huh. Were you an ag volunteer or a health?
No, I was an English teacher.
An English teacher. In what country?
Lesotho.
Lesotho, which is a country for our listeners that is entirely circumscribed by the Republic of South Africa. Lesotho is a kingdom in the mountains of the easternish region of South Africa. So you were a volunteer there as an English teacher, and you came back and you started an organization?
No, not right away. I mean, once you're a Peace Corps volunteer, you're kind of in it for life. And
mm-hmm.
We swear to assist the countries that invite us to do whatever we've been asked to do,
mm-hmm.
To increase the understanding of Americans on the part of the people we serve.
Mm-hmm.
And then the third goal is to increase the understanding of the people we serve
mm-hmm.
on the part of Americans.
Okay.
And so we kind of have this lifelong commitment to do that, and it's sort of been interpreted to mean domestic community service in to one degree or another for the rest of our lives.
Uh-huh.
So I certainly have always believed in that and believed in a certain amount of activism, and my parents were always active, and my grandparents were always active. My earliest memory of visiting my grandmother in New York was walking into her apartment building and seeing her as president of the Tenants Association holding a fort with a large number of renters. So it's been in our blood for quite some time. But let no one be confused that I approach all of these things with a great deal of pragmatism.
Mm-hmm.
I have no rose-colored glasses in the house.
Interesting. And what do you mean by no rose-colored glasses?
That is, I'm a very practical person. You know, one has to. It's about getting it done.
Mm-hmm.
It's about getting results.
Mm-hmm.
It's not about doing good in some nebulous kind of way.
Mm-hmm.
We work with many organizations that believe that affordable housing is an important goal.
Mm-hmm.
And we say, well, what do you mean by that?
Mm-hmm.
And they'll say, well, we're not really sure what they mean by that. Or some people think that affordable housing policy means a small subsidy given to a small percentage of the poor and working poor.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's the only thing that really matters, and everybody else is part of, you know, rock and roll. We believe that affordable housing is the ability of people to afford their housing, whether they be at the upper end of the economic spectrum
mm-hmm.
or the lower end of the economic spectrum.
Hmm.
Your housing is very, very important. It's the number one expense of all households.
Mm-hmm.
It is extremely valuable in terms of your emotional and physical health.
Mm-hmm.
It's extremely valuable in terms of the economic prosperity of communities.
Mm-hmm.
People who view themselves as temporary spend differently than people who view themselves as permanent.
Interesting.
So, and of course, the how much people participate in the social, economic, and political life of their communities also has to do with how much they feel as proprietors, as integrated citizens.
So as we near the end of the podcast, I'd like to ask a final question. taking into account this, the really a lifetime of public service, where as a child you were inspired by previous generations in your family, you ended up doing public service for others and communities abroad, and then you've done public service domestically in your own community. You've spoken of your passion for housing issues. What is it that drives you? When you wake up every morning, what is it that you're thinking to yourself? Why do you do this to yourself? Clearly, there are many late night meetings. There's a lot of, just a lot of, I'm sure, sacrifices that you've made in order to advance this interest for yourself, but also for a large community of renters that you say is rising. So why are you doing it? What is your motivation to do this public service?
Well, part of it's revenge. As I mentioned, a landlord made a big mistake when they decided to try to evict me. And they may, my landlord may be the one responsible for the progress that we're making in Montgomery County in an ironic kind of way. But we are seeing a greater, much greater awareness of renter issues in this region than ever before. There isn't a legislator in Montgomery County, either on the county level or the state level, much less statewide, who doesn't have some understanding that there is a renter community out there that is suffering. We've had scores of media interviews, newspaper articles, television interviews, radio interviews that have raised awareness and brought this to people's attention. We are on the cusp of legislation that's about to be passed in Montgomery County. That's the first ever, you know, or at least in multiple decades, of renter protection legislation in this region. It's modest. It's common sense renter protection. But it's more than ever existed before. And it was all, it represents a shift in what was once considered a silent minority to a growing minority that's soon to be a majority in Montgomery County that is getting an organized voice, and that voice is having effect.
Interesting. So that has been Matt Losak, who is the executive director of Renters Alliance in Montgomery County, Maryland, who speaks really about trying to make practical advances that improve people's lives. That it's not enough to be a do-gooder and to be idealistic and to have notions of some utopian society of the future. Yes, you must have vision, but according to Matt, you must be on the ground making real progress in real people's lives, and that is what makes all the difference. This has been episode 42 of Public Interest Podcast with your host, Jordan Cooper, where we interview politicians, activists, advocates, and others who seek to improve the state of the world. Thank you so much for joining us, and we will talk to you next time.